And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where it's July 2nd, and LeBron James has already signed with the Los Angeles Lakers. When the thing came over, I just about lost my mind, and I assume you did too, Brian Windhorst. How are you doing out in L.A.?
I wasn't really that surprised. I mean, we knew he was going to be a Laker. It was just a matter of when it was going to come down, right?
Yeah, no, the destination, although there was some last-minute Philly is trying to put all the pieces together to get Kawhi because they think they might be able to get LeBron buzz. The destination was not a shocker. I didn't expect it late at night, not even that late, whatever at night on July 1, the first official day of free agency, wink, wink, everyone's been tampering everywhere for like 2 months. And via the Clutch Sports Twitter, which I'm embarrassed to say I did not follow before last night, and I still don't follow, actually. Were you a loyal follower of the Clutch Sports Group Twitter?
I was a follower. I don't know if it was loyal. They don't tweet that much. No, I mean, obviously I got it texted to me. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised at the timing Sunday night. Although, when LeBron makes an announcement like this, I guess news cycle is irrelevant. You know, it's a situation where, you know, there's a process that, you know, he had to go through with informing people and talking to people and stuff. And I think once that process got done, that's when he announced it. And it could have been at 8 Eastern. It could have been at 5 Eastern. It could have been at 10 Eastern. He had made up his mind he was going to L.A. for a period of time. I don't know if it was 10 days. I don't know if it was 10 months. I don't think it was. I think, you know, the way the season ended contributed to it. But it was very clear to me that he was going to be a Laker within the last 5-6 days. And, you know, you would say, well, then why didn't you report it? Well, you don't report it because, you know, it's not 100% finalized. And if you're wrong on something like that, you'll be in infamy. And no one, you know, in the 2 or 3 people who would be able to confirm it would ever confirm that because they want to make their announcement. But it was pretty clear. And you know, you and I talked yesterday, and you said, I think there's a possibility for Philly here. And I was like, no, there's not. That was a courtesy meeting. And he wouldn't have – there were teams, Zach, that were begging to get a chance to pitch him just to try to show him what they thought they could do. And I think there were better basketball fits out there. You know, the Denver Nuggets really, really wanted to have a chance to pitch their vision for LeBron to him and how he could fit. And there's no question in my mind. I mean, they would have had to do some sort of sign and trade with the Cavs, but there's no question in my mind it would have been a better team than the Lakers are now. But, he, you know, he was focused on L.A., and this is not a great basketball fit, but he's making more of a long-term play here, both during his career and after his career. And that was a factor that Philly and Denver and other teams really in Cleveland couldn't compete with.
Yeah, the only reason I called you and said, are you hearing the same Philly stuff, is that the Sixers were, according to people around the league, acting as if they thought it was possible. They had kind of amped up like Jared Bayless scenarios where can we buy him out for the minimum somehow and stretch that figure? Do we have salary dumps lined up? And of course they had their owners out there and stuff like that. They were acting as if we maybe have a 5% chance to pull off this improbable thing at the last minute. And of course then they were not given any time. And really everyone within two steps of this process had been hearing for weeks that it was a wrap and it was going to be the Lakers. So it was a last minute plot twist that, was not super credible, but was a little bit interesting. And now, as you said, he's a Laker, along with JaVale McGee, Lance Stephenson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and everyone who's left over from last year's Lakers. So let's start here. This is the greatest player in the world, inarguably a top three player of all time, almost inarguably a top two player of all time, closing in on the GOAT status. So it's obviously, this is a mega event. He's going to you choose between Boston and the Lakers, the team, the franchise. And he was, remember all the coverage that came out about, oh, how he would fit in Boston. He could go to, there was like a less than 0% chance he was going to Boston. Like that was never ever going to be a thing, as you know better than I do even. So now he plays for the Glamour team in the Glamour City. And I wrote this in my free agency preview on Thursday, and I said it again on the Woj TV thing on Friday. Like, I never bought the idea that he needed Kawhi there to go. I thought he was always willing to be the first one in the door because it's LeBron, Los Angeles, some nice young players, and cap flexibility. It's just a matter of time. And I think the interesting thing about signing a 3+1 is that he's indicating that he will take the time. He will wait the time. Now, he said that in the Lee Jenkins letter 4 years ago that it was going to take a long time and it was going to require patience. And like 5 seconds later, they traded Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love. So TBD on the patience. However, the 3+1 is interesting. And I would imagine, when something like this happens, I don't necessarily go right to my people that I know best on the jilted team and start asking for opinions and information. You got to give them like a day to process this, even though, the Cavs people have been preparing for this for a long time. Like there have been something ranging from resignation to pessimism to, occasional, optimism tempered with the realization that it's probably false hope in that front office for more than a year. I would imagine there is some consternation or eye rolling about that he signed a 3-year deal plus one right off the bat with the Lakers after never committing for more than two, or really 1+1 to the Cavs. Are you hearing any of that?
Well, let me just unpack a few things real quick.
Unpack some stuff.
One, I do think a period of days ago, I don't know if it was 3 or 5 days, the Lakers were unsure that they needed, if they needed to get Kawhi or not. And I do think there was a moment.
I don't disagree with that. And I actually think it was a really genius play by the Spurs to hold that opt-in deadline over the Lakers' head and say, get it done.
Right. And I think there was a period where they were like, boy, do we need to do this to try to figure out whether this quote unquote closes the LeBron deal. And I think they investigated it. And they basically got the word, no, that's not true. LeBron's prepared either way. And that's when the talks backed way off. And that's one of the reasons why I knew that this was a done deal, because I knew LeBron's decision was coming quick. And had the Lakers had the feel that they had to get Kawhi, we would have been aware, because the tremors out there in the league would have been huge about the deal that was potentially coming, and it was quiet. They weren't in serious talks with the Spurs. So they got the message that they didn't have to trade for Kawhi. That's one thing. To me, the contract is a slap across the face to Dan Gilbert.
It has to be, right? And I checked in with a couple people last night, and they're like, no, don't read it as an FU to Dan. I'm like, how else am I supposed to read it?
I want to be really clear on this point. I do not think that LeBron left Cleveland because solely of his relationship with Dan Gilbert.
Of course
not. Nor do I think that Dan Gilbert should be blamed. If anything, I think Dan kept his end of the bargain up in investing in the team incredibly. I mean, he was just handed a $50 million luxury tax bill on Saturday when the league's final numbers came out. I think Dan kept up his end of the bargain. But what I think what it is here is that LeBron never trusted Dan, and therefore he only gave him short deals. And because he only gave him short deals and the lack of trust, the Cavs were forced into decisions that made long-term success extremely challenging. And so the fact that obviously he's met Magic before. You know, he knows Magic in passing. LeBron had met Jeannie Buss before. He knows her in passing. I don't know what his relationship with Rob Pelinka was, but it certainly wasn't that, deep. He had essentially no relationship with the Lakers, next to no relationship. Certainly respect, certainly, belief, and certainly, intense, respect for what Magic is as a person and what he's done as a businessman. But he essentially had no basis to trust the Lakers for any reason. And frankly, their last 5 years, even though I know it's been different people making the decision, wouldn't engender trust for anybody. They've made blunder after blunder after blunder. And yet, he walks up and says, I'm prepared to give you 3 years, maybe even four, more than he was willing to give the Cavs at all over these last 4 years. So that, to me, was an incredible statement about his feelings about Dan Gilbert. Not at this moment, but the way he's looked at him for the last 4 years.
It's really incredible how LeBron has navigated his career. I mean, the contrast between this decision and Kevin Durant's decision is, I'm sorry, it's irresistible. Kevin Durant joined the best team in the league, and LeBron is joining, if not quite a blank slate, a question mark. Like, the roster they have around him right now is interesting because I'm super high on Ingram. I'm on the high end of Ingram. I would be doing all I could to hold on to Ingram. I don't know if it's going to be possible for them, but I would be doing everything I could to hold on to Ingram. Lonzo, I think, is I'm generally hopeful about Lonzo. Not nearly to the degree that I am about Ingram. Kuzma, I think, is a little bit overrated right now, and they would be selling high with him, but whatever. He's joining a question mark. And it's almost, you mentioned blunder after blunder. I don't want to deconstruct the last 9 years or whatever of Lakers, 7 years of Lakers history. Ever since the Chris Paul veto, it's just been a mess. And some of it was predictable, and some of it, like the Dwight Steve Nash team completely obliterating itself, was not super predictable. His NBA career is drafted by Cleveland, constructs a super team from scratch in Miami, which is a situation once you have it locked in, you know we're a championship contender immediately, if not the favorite. Goes back to Cleveland. Why? Because he was born around there. I think the Cavs had some high draft picks, having cornered the market on the lottery for what felt like five straight years, but they didn't have anything that you would have looked at and said, well, this is clearly a championship nucleus. They just...
No, and Kyrie and Wiggins wouldn't have been a championship team.
No, and you know, all this stuff, I don't know if Dan Gilbert has ever gone out and said what Stephen A. said about, you know, I'm excited to get my team back. I know that they didn't have a relationship. You and I know they didn't have a relationship. You and I both know that there is certainly some ego jostling, that there's probably a big part of Dan Gilbert that wants to prove I can build a winner here without him. Guess what? They've been relevant without LeBron under Dan Gilbert's stewardship for literally 0 seconds. Every second he has not been there, they have been completely irrelevant as an NBA franchise. They got LeBron because their chief accomplishments in getting LeBron were being the franchise close to where he was born and winning the lottery three times. The Lakers got LeBron because they're the Lakers. I just don't think there's anything else there. I mean, Ingram is a good draft pick. Their last two trades, the big trades with Cleveland on the trade deadline and with the Nets, the Mozgov-Russell trade, are smart trades. They're also dumps of previous Laker mistakes, so they kind of like net out to neutral. It's interesting that he's picked these teams for reasons that are just sort of inherent to them, rather through geography or history and not through basketball at all. Isn't that interesting? It's just interesting to me.
Well, this is what I've been saying. The Miami decision was a basketball decision, a good one, not five, not six, not seven. The Cleveland decision was an emotional decision, although the basketball was good.
It wasn't bad. I don't mean to say it was bad. It just wasn't.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, LeBron has made it clear in the past that he didn't come back to play with Kyrie Irving. He came back to play in Cleveland. I am going to throw a flag on that. He could have come back to play in Cleveland at this point in his career. I think he saw Kyrie and knew he could get Kevin Love and thought they would have a great chance to be really good. But that was an emotional decision. This here, I can only say, is a business decision. I mean, certainly there's family elements, because I do think that his wife really was interested in living here. I say here, I'm in LA right now. This was a business decision, and it was certainly not a basketball decision. This team is, and Zach, I did not like these moves that they made. Their first moves post LeBron were not great moves. Now I'm gonna sit back and wait a little bit. We're on day two of free agency. Let's see how things develop. You know, it's a long time. We'll see what the roster takes shape as. But I didn't see Miami Heat level moves coming out of the gate here, like where they re-upped Udonis Haslam at a discount and got Mike Miller and stuff like that.
If you had told me that the Onion put out a story that after signing LeBron James, the Lakers signed JaVale McGee and Lance Stephenson, I would have been like, yeah, it's kind of funny. It's a good, like, Onion. Somebody on the Onion's a big NBA fan. Not that those guys, like, look, Lance I thought was solid last year. I don't know that super ball dominant Dance Dance Revolution dribbler guy who doesn't shoot very well is like what I want next to LeBron. But for the room exception, I take it or leave it. JaVale was so good during
the... Wait a minute.
Okay.
For the room exception, Zach, you're telling me that's... I mean, again, their championship status is not going to be determined by what they do with the room exception.
I thought the room exception was going to be a big man. And I actually thought Brook Lopez would have made a nice fit with just now that he's become a three-point shooter, or last year he dipped down, so maybe
I
not good enough.
Not, who else in the world was willing to pay Lance Stephenson $4 million?
I agree. Like, I'm just saying, like, it surprised me. I'm not going to get up in arms about it. And JaVale, I'm not going to, at the minimum, JaVale was so good during the finals that maybe this is like when Doc Rivers used to see two guys, a guy play two good games against them and, like, bring that guy in. And, of course, KCP is a clutch client, so you do the math on that.
Well, the look, who's shooting from the outside?
Well, KCP until last year was captain of the – wait, isn't he a good shooter? Oh, I just checked his percentages. He's actually not a good shooter team, and last year he shot 38%, so perhaps that is not an aberration. Kuzma, what did Ingram shoot last year? It's obviously a weakness.
I know what
on the
Lance shot.
It's obviously a weakness on the team is currently constructed, and obviously Lonzo – I think they kept some extra backboards in stock because Lonzo was denting them. Ingram shot 39%. People slept on how good Ingram got last year. Can you tell I'm a little hyper this morning? I couldn't sleep last night. Now I'm hyper.
I like Ingram. I really like Lonzo, actually. I think Lonzo's a smart player. I think Lonzo makes good basketball decisions. And the one thing about Lonzo that I thought he... you know, that really hurt him last year was he was so slight. He got thrown around, and he was not willing to go into the paint and get fouls. And he's added, based on the photos, he's been working his butt off in the weight room, and I think he's, you know, he may be improving that. But it's really hard to, you know, it's really hard to play LeBron with any non-shooters. And if you're going to play with LeBron with a non-shooter, that guy better be an elite something. He better be an elite shot blocker. He better be an elite rebounder. He better be an elite...
Lonzo is an elite rebounder.
Okay, true. But, you know, ultimately he's a guard rebounder. But, you can afford to play Tristan Thompson with LeBron if the other three guys you have on the court are dead-eye shooters. So that his space can be maintained. It's very difficult to that's going to be the role of Lonzo. Like the teams aren't going to guard him, and it's going to be difficult. So they've got a lot of work to do on this roster. Even though I do think that Ingram and LeBron are a really good foundation, they're going to need a lot more.
I like watching Lonzo Ball play basketball. So I get the Lonzo fit optimism. The Lonzo can fit with LeBron fit optimism. He's really smart. When he puts everything together, he is a very good very good defensive player and will be very good. Great rebounder, pushes the pace, one of the best hit ahead passers in the league already, blah, blah, blah. He just can't shoot. And until he can shoot, those things playing alongside LeBron are just not that interesting to me. The defense and the rebound are interesting, but offensively, like, you can talk to me all you want about how high IQ he is, how he cuts, his hit ahead. Like, there's always this talk about how LeBron's team, like, man, when LeBron's teams get out and run, and like, Lonzo's gonna be a perfect fit for him, and Kevin Love's gonna be throwing touchdown passes. LeBron, when push comes to shove, does not want to play fast. He just hasn't ever played fast. His teams play slow. He's a chess master in the half court when things really get tight. And in that reality, LeBron holding the ball in the half court in a slowish pace, Lonzo Ball is just a dude who can't shoot. Like that's right now. I'm not saying that's what he's going to be in 2 or 3 or 4 years. That's what he is right now. And so I think the sort of like, I'm a Lonzo optimist, but I think the general Lonzo defense and optimism, on the basketball internet is, I think, leading to too much optimism about what a clean fit he will be with Bron.
I just think I think LeBron is interested in playing with him because I think there was some narrative that existed. Oh, he won't want to deal with LeVar, blah, blah, blah. They'll want to get Lonzo the hell out of there. I don't think that's true. I think LeBron is interested in playing with him. I just want to know about how the overall fit goes, but it's too early to really fully evaluate where the Lakers' place is in the West. I'm just going to say, and I'm not saying anything that LeBron doesn't know, but he is in for a lot harder regular season than he's ever had. Because when you, like, there's no gimme in the West. I mean, in my mind, the Clippers, Suns, and Kings are sort of the three teams in the West that are, you know, probably going to be outside the playoffs, although the Suns are really trying. But that's not going to be.
I'm not going to sleep on the Clippers like that.
Okay, I'm saying, like, but my point is, it's not a guaranteed win. Like, you know, LeBron has lived in a world for 15 years where there was a roadkill coming over the horizon on the schedule. Every, you know, you're having a bad week. Just wait a minute. Hold on. Here come the Sixers. You know, forever. You know, here come the Hawks. You know, relax. Here come the Magic.
Windhorse just going scorched earth on the Eastern Conference.
Well, whatever. But I mean, like, seriously, like, this Western Conference, I mean, there's going to be weeks where it's going to be like, oh, it's the Pelicans on Tuesday. It's the Jazz on Thursday. It's the Timberwolves on Saturday. Oh, it's a back to back. You know, Denver and Utah, have fun with that on the road. You know, like, this is going to be a real different situation than LeBron's been in for 10 years. And remember, those last two teams he played with in Cleveland before he left the first time were 60-win teams. This is going to be an incredible challenge for him with the way the West is set up right now.
I want to get back to the 3 years. You mentioned the sort of the leverage that he held over Dan Gilbert and the Cavaliers by constantly signing what were effectively one-year deals. And I agree complete with you. I mean, with him holding his departure over them, they sacrificed the short term to a degree that was extreme even for a typical championship contender, which generally you should sacrifice the short term when you have a chance to win the championship. You know, all the picks out the door. All the payments to Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith and guys that they couldn't have replaced anyway. I mean, it's not as simple as people make it out to be, but a lot of, and in the past, both in Cleveland and Miami, a lot of roster spots given over to sort of like your James Jones, Kendrick Perkins, like friends of Bron, old guy friends of Bron who can't play anymore. I'm very curious, given everything you just said about the West and how hard it is, how this is going to unfold from a team building perspective. Because when you talk to people about LeBron, for years you have heard, okay, so in Miami he had no voice, right? It was Pat Riley's team. In Cleveland he gave himself a voice through the power of his contract and his stardom and his greatness. But it was never like a collaborative voice with Dan Gilbert because of just, and there were stories about how he wasn't talking to Kobe Altman for long portions of the year and blah, blah. It was never the collaboration. It was never, he didn't want to be known as the GM of the team. He hates that, as you know, and didn't have a great working relationship with some of the decision makers. This, I think, is viewed as an opportunity for a middle ground, an opportunity where he's going to be able to exert influence in a positive, collaborative, relationship, and one in which the Lakers have time by virtue of the three guaranteed seasons of his contract. I'm fascinated sort of by what you've heard of in that regard, if that's a fair way to put it. I don't know how that will unfold. I mean, I don't know if that unfolds in just more of that kind of win now stuff, if they strike an in between, if they strike sort of in between path, or maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. Maybe it's more of the same.
The situation in Cleveland with his role in free agency decisions is general personnel decisions is so complicated. I know that it's tempting for people just to say, oh, he was a GM, or people to say he wasn't the GM. The answer was it depended. You know, he basically arranged for the Kevin Love trade. I mean, David Griffin tells the story of, you know, like Mike Miller. Like, they were trying to sign Mike Miller. Mike Miller was hedging, and all of a sudden a phone call came in, and it was like, yeah, I talked to LeBron, I'm coming. And, you know, they had tried to trade for Kevin Love, and Love was like, I'm not interested. A phone call happened, and it was like, yeah, Kevin would like to be traded to the Cavs. that there was, when they did the J.R. Smith trade, that LeBron literally went to David Griffin and said, because Griffin did not want to do that deal with J.R. He wanted Iman Shumpert, and he wanted Timo Mozgov. He did not want J.R. Smith. And LeBron looked him in the eye and said, bring J.R., and I'll take care of him. So there were times when he absolutely was involved in team building and decision making and said, do this and that. But then you had like this last year where he didn't have a relationship enough with Kobe Altman and didn't really have a relationship enough with Dan because of how the Kobe the Kyrie Irving thing went down, that to force the Cavs to make midseason moves, he basically had to pout for 3 weeks and go into a shell.
Which, by the way, and, is why I didn't vote him for MVP. Was
it's
that he
why
stopped,
I didn't vote. It's why stopped, I didn't vote for him for MVP.
And he stopped trying for a month. And then there was this spin put on it that, well, that was the only way he could convince them that he needed to make a trade, that it was this big Machiavellian scheme to alert the front office and the higher-ups that the team wasn't working and essentially self-sabotage for the greater good. And there's truth in that, as you're saying right now. On the other hand, he has to take some of the blame for the fact that the atmosphere was so bad that that's how it had to play out. I'm sorry. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, so that that was essentially, I mean, it's complicated. It's complicated. And, you know, this I want to be clear. This goes both ways. Like, the Cavs asked him to sign an extension last year so that they would feel comfortable enough to trade for Paul George. And in that trade especially, and I mean, this is, I'll just say it, this is right from the Pacers, okay? The Pacers say that they would have been willing to do a deal if the Cavs would have been willing to include an unprotected first-round pick in the future. I don't know what year it was. And the reason the Pacers wanted it is because they thought that Paul George and LeBron might walk and that the Cavs would be terrible. And in this pick that they were trading Paul George for might be a top five pick. That's what they wanted, in addition to what they were going to get out of Denver and the deal and stuff like that. And the Cavs refused to give it with no protection. Because if you go look at all the trades that Dan Gilbert has traded away first-round picks over the years, they've all been protected. That's one of the reasons why Dan doesn't have a problem with trading picks, because he knows if we're terrible, I can protect it. The pick that they owe to the Hawks for this next year, which was done for Kyle Korver, is top 10 protected. Dan said, yeah, do that pick, because if LeBron walks, we're going to be okay. And so, you know, and basically what the Cavs' message was, now there are other people in this league who would tell you the Pacers were never trading Paul George to the Cavs. They were never going to do it, and that was just all, you know, whatever. So whose fault is it that Paul George isn't there? Is it the Cavs' fault for not protecting the pick and saying we're going to go all in no matter what on LeBron James? Is it LeBron's fault for signing short-term contracts and refusing to, you know, to go long and give the Cavs some hard ground to stand on when they make these trades? Like I don't know. It's a Spider-Man meme with two guys pointing at each other, right? Like, it's complicated.
Wow, I'm impressed with that. It's a good reference.
I strive to impress you with pop culture.
I don't know where that's from. Animated Spider-Man or something. I don't know, but I see it all the time.
Right. So, like, it's not just as simple as saying his fault. Now for me, my viewpoint on it is, now that LeBron is gone, the Cavs won't have a player like that possibly for the rest of my life. And I would have made the Paul George deal, and I would have unprotected the pick, and I just would have dealt with the fallout. But that's easy for me to say, because they would have had egg all over their face if Paul George and LeBron walked, and they had an unprotected 2022 pick hanging out there, and they didn't have Colin Sexton now to try to do over with. I mean, that's easy for me to say. To me, I see LeBron as an unrenewable resource. And I would have done everything I possibly could to keep him. I would have said, the Bucks traded Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and they haven't been good for 40 years. The Bulls said goodbye to Michael Jordan and they haven't been back to the finals. They've had moments, but they haven't been back to the finals for 20 years. I would have said I would hold on to with grim death. But again, that's easy for me to say. But it's complicated. It's complicated. It's trust issues on both sides. Dan Gilbert didn't trust LeBron, and rightfully so. And LeBron didn't trust Dan Gilbert, and maybe you could say rightfully so.
There's been so many trades and near trades involving Paul George and Eric Bledsoe and all this that I've got to go back and look at all my notes and stuff. But I mean, if I recall correctly, the trade you're talking about is the one where Kevin Love would have gone to Denver, and some other stuff would have happened. Gary Harris and picks go to Indiana.
Right.
As I recall, the Cavs thought that was done. Like whatever the protecting of the pick was, and I don't have those notes in front of me right now. Like this idea that the Pacers would never have done it, and they never would have helped out Cleveland like this, or never would have put Paul George in a situation so good with LeBron. But by the way, it doesn't look like Paul George is that into playing with LeBron.
Clearly.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That's the one. Like the Cavs were under the impression that was done, and the rug was pulled out from under them at the last minute, right?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to all the parties. Everybody has their own style of the story. But the Pacers, by the way, the Pacers have no regrets, right? They're in a great position they ended up trading for an all-star, and they love where they're at, and they were a hair from knocking the Cavs off in the first round and maybe making the Eastern Conference Finals. The Pacers have no regrets on it, but the Pacers wanted this unprotected pick. And in fact, I was told Herb Simon would never have signed off on the deal if he, you know, and this is sort of the Pacers' defense for, you know, not, you know, consummating it, was that Herb Simon was not signing off on any deal where they didn't get an unprotected pick.
Always blame the owner in the end.
Whatever. I mean, again, everybody has their own side of the story. But the bottom line was the Cavs were limited in what they were prepared to do because they couldn't get a commitment from LeBron going forward. And so, again, is that Dan Gilbert's fault or is that LeBron's fault? Especially that here coming to the Lakers, he gives them 3 years after knowing Magic Johnson essentially for 3 hours. You tell me how that goes down.
Well, that's why I'm interested in sort of what happens now, right? Because the Lakers, it's not like an unbelievable draft record, but their tanking, whether it was accidental or intentional, has yielded a pretty solid group of young players. I mean, D'Angelo Russell's gone. Ingram's good. Nance is gone.
They had a really nice last 30 games, too.
Yeah. Clarkson's gone. Randall, TBD, we'll talk about him in a second.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the fact that the Cavs helped the Lakers clear the cap space that they're using right now.
Yes. Kuzma, Hart, both good picks for where they were taken. There was a moment where the Lakers were excited to build around all their young players, and we just went through a whole list of them that are gone. And now I forgot about Lonzo too. I just named eight players. 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are already, or 3 of them are already gone. Randall could be 4. Ingram is the only one to me that is like perhaps a future all-star. We'll see how Lonzo could get there, I guess. There's just a lot of distance. I just wonder if LeBron is going to be in a rush to get rid of those guys and get some veterans in the door and how that's going to play out. And I don't think we know yet.
Well, I am curious about these first moves. I'm fine with KCP as a player. You need players like that. You need guys who can defend multiple positions. He's an adequate 3-point shooter. I'm not crazy about the $12 million contract because I think in this market that's a bit of an overpay. But you know what? I'm not going to freak out about that. And I know that there's the clutch sports angle. I get it. Blah, blah, blah. I get it. Okay, let's move on from that. What my surprise is not that they signed KCP. It's that they did it immediately and limited their options. And again, roster spots on the Lakers are going to have value. Why you're committing to guys in minimum contracts and stuff on July 1st is beyond me. I mean, Carmelo Anthony could become a free agent in the next month.
The banana boat, someone's inflating the banana boat somewhere.
Well, Dwayne, Jamal Crawford potentially could be a fit here. And I say here again, I'm in L.A. in the moment. These are all things I would be vetting out before I was handing out JaVale McGee deals. And frankly, to play with LeBron James in Los Angeles, I'm not paying premiums. I'm not paying Lance Stephenson the room exception. I will offer Lance a minimum contract, and we'll talk about whether it's guaranteed. you know, we'll talk about whether JaVale McGee's contract is guaranteed. Certainly, I'm not doing that on July 1st. So, but, okay, I'll give the Lakers some time here. They may have Kawhi Leonard by the start of training camp. We'll have to wait and see.
That's the other thing. It's not only the 3 years. It's that after taking till July 9th and July 11th, he went on July 1st, which gives his team – more options for all of those things you just talked about. I mean, it is, if I were a Cleveland official, I couldn't help myself. I would be like, this is the exact opposite of what he did to us, and he has the right to do it. But, going on July 1st, I mean, the pool of free agents is much deeper than it is on July 11th. It just is, even with LeBron holding up the whole league at times when he takes that long.
Yeah. I mean, Zach, everything has changed even from 2014. I mean, back when I was a kid, you know, on July 1st, you actually, you had phone calls. You had meetings on, like, July, you know, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And then guys started, like, you know, stars who were getting max extensions, you know, Nikola Jokic, Chris Paul would agree on July 1st. But you wouldn't see role players come off the board until at least the 3rd. Maybe occasionally you'd see, like, a guy come out and take a mid-level right off the bat. Everything's very, very fast now. I mean, I remember, and I'm not even talking about 15 years ago, I'm talking about 5 years ago, that free agency went down during the Vegas Summer League. Like, you'd see guys sitting at the game, and then a day later they were signing a $50 million deal. Now, by the time Vegas comes, free agency is over. So there's definitely a quickening of the pace. And by the way, your story about flopping free agency and the draft was excellent. And in a shorter-term fix, just for the NBA fan, we can't have free agency start at midnight. We got a little bit of a break this year because it was a Saturday night and some people were standing up. Free agency has to start at like 3 o'clock on July 1st or something like that.
That will happen. That's an inevitability. They're going to make it. They're going to make it so we can have primetime TV shows around it. Like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Next year that's going to happen. But you know, I'm team building now is going to be very important for the Lakers. And I'm not jumping up and down with glee with some of the stuff that I'm seeing here.
What happens to Kevin Love now?
So I investigated this a couple of days ago because I knew it was coming. The Cavs have told Kevin that they don't intend to trade him. I think at this point Kevin's fine with that. And I'm going to tell you why. He's got 1 year left and he's got an opt-out. And
fascinating player option decision, by the way.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something.
$26 million.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. There's going to be a lot of cap space out there next year. And if Kevin Love goes back to Minnesota, Kevin Love, I know he's diminished a little bit as an athlete at this point, but he averaged 20 and 10 in the first half last season. He can have a season this year where he averages, you know, 23 and 12.
You know, even if he can't get an average annual salary of 26, which is what his option is, he's at the age where if someone said, "Okay, we'll give you 485 or something," that you think about locking it in.
Yeah, Kevin may be very happy to be the centerpiece of a team that and put up a great year in a walk season. He may be very happy. Now, when I talked to executives last night, they were like, "No, Cavs got a tank." Their pick is top 10 protected. Trade Love, trade Korver. I do think they will trade Korver. Trade Love, trade Korver, buy out George Hill, look for any way to move Tristan Thompson. JR, I don't know, JR only has one guaranteed year left. Maybe you could do something there. But, tank, play Colin Sexton a bunch of minutes, play Chetty Osmond a bunch of minutes, play Ante Zizic, tank, get a top 5 pick. My feel is that's not what Dan Gilbert wants to do. My feel is Dan Gilbert wants to give LeBron the middle finger back and make the playoffs. And that's what their plan is, to try to make the playoffs, to try to be competitive, give away their draft, you know, let their draft pick get extinguished and then start a retrofit in 2019.
If there is a path back to Cleveland being a 50-win team, Forget a conference finals team or a finals team. If there is a path back to 50 wins for the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise that does not involve bottoming out, I will applaud them for discovering it along the way. Because I agree with all the executives you've talked to. I wrote a piece about how screwed they are when the finals ended, were LeBron to leave, that we reran this morning or last night with updates. It's a really bad situation, and they're the only positive benefit from the Kyrie Irving disaster is that they're very well positioned to tank if they just move on from Kevin Love. And by the way, they may tank anyway, but to me, that's the sooner you eat that pain, the better. Finding a market for Kevin Love that's a real huge plus value is going to be a little bit difficult, but I think you have to explore.
Can you get a first-round pick for him? Any first-round pick?
I think you probably could. I think it's going to be harder than people think. I think you probably could. Not a good one.
Wouldn't that be an achievement?
And the option discussion would be interesting with the teams trading for him.
I'll put it this way. If he became on the market, he's an interesting player to have.
Kevin Love's good. I agree with you. In this market, it's.
By the way, he may start on the Eastern Conference All-Star team next year. He is in position to have a great year if he stays in Cleveland. It could be great for him.
Let's just not really do conferences for the All-Star game. If we're going to have the guys pick the teams, let's just do away with that. That's a different discussion.
That will be for later.
We'll be back with more of my conversation with the great Brian Windhorst in a second. But did you ever want to sit courtside at a Mavs game with Mark Cuban? You might get ejected. You never know. How about a batting clinic for Mark Teixeira? He's good. Or how about shooting hoops with Jay Williams and Seth Greenberg? That's a good combination. Maybe join SVP on the set of the Midnight Sports Center. Now is your shot. The 2018 ESPYs auction goes live on July 8th. That is 6 days from now. This is your chance to bid on over 80 once-in-a-lifetime sports experiences. All the proceeds, most importantly, benefit the incredible work of the V Foundation for Cancer Research. So join us starting July 8th at ebay.com/ESPN. Do not miss out. Back in a second with more Brian Windhorst. Julius Randle now becomes a very interesting player, because he has a $12.4 million cap hold that's sitting on the Lakers' books right now.
Can they convince him to do – they're not going to be a cap space player anymore?
They could be.
Can they overpay him for 1 year and convince him to take a one-year deal? Can they give him $20 million for 1 year?
Sure, I guess. I mean, he wants to get paid a lot of money.
For sure. Because right now the Lakers, without knowing whether they have Kawhi, they have a chance to get Kawhi, they have to protect their cap space for next year. Julius, there's a couple of teams out. There's only a couple of teams out there with cap space left who can chase Julius Randle. I think there's three, right?
No, I like Julius Randle.
So do I. I'm not debating that.
However, he is not a tailor-made great fit with LeBron. Because a lot of his, he got a little, even as the president of Julius Randle Hill, he got a little hoggy last year. He really loves the ball, and a lot of his production was, I'm just going to bull rush people and lay the ball up and in, which is fine. He was good at it, but he's too good of a passer to play that way. I thought he de-emphasized his passing. But long story short, we've seen he has not been a great pick and roll player in the NBA. It's just not how he generally prefers to operate. And he's a 4.5, much like Kevin Love is a 4.5. And so what's going to happen is the same thing that happened with the LeBron Love pick and roll, which is teams are going to switch it. And the difference is Julius Randle can't
shoot.
That's so, right. So defender. When he's motivated, he's pretty good. When he's not motivated, he's not. So defender who can't shoot and needs the ball and isn't like a super accomplished pick and roll partner for LeBron is, though, a talented player that I would be interested in having on my team, perhaps not a player I would be interested in having on this team, given all the cap constraints you said. So I spent much of the bleary-eyed morning looking at ways to sign and trade Julius Randle. What could I get for him? And I'll tell you, my friend, it ain't easy. And it ain't easy for lots of reasons.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Number one, the cap space dilemma that you just talked about. They want to be as flexible as possible for next summer. And it's not just for Kawhi. it's they got to be nimble for everything you just said. For when stars X, Y, and Z say, okay, that's looking interesting, they got to be able to be nimble. Number two, the one remnant of poison pill base year compensation rules is exactly this situation. When you re-sign your own free agent to trade him immediately in a sign and trade transaction, and you give him a big raise, which would be the case here, his salary, it's very complicated. His salary for outgoing purposes
counts half.
But for incoming purposes, it's the full thing. However, that only is triggered if you are over the cap upon striking this transaction. Very complicated ways in which the Lakers could order. The Lakers have now set themselves up where they need at least $47 to $48 million of cap space to fit LeBron and KCP. There are ways they could order all of these transactions. I checked with all the cap experts I know this morning who were awake anyway. There are ways they can order all of these things where they could sign and trade Julius Randle without triggering this base year compensation. In other words, with cap room still existent and leave cap room left over to sign those other guys. There are other paths where they can just renounce him and trade stuff like Ingram and other smaller salaries and take in a bigger salary into cap space that they have left over. There's lots of things they can do, but the base year compensation really makes life complicated when you're doing these trades.
Boy. Yeah, the base year compensation is one of the more arcane things. It doesn't come into play very often.
No, this is it. This is the only time.
The other thing is, because I'm thinking in my head, is there a number where they can give Julius Randle where he's like, okay, kind of like they did with Caldwell Pope last year, I will accept this money because it's so high and I will just re-enter. But if you do a one-year deal with him, let's just say you're convinced that you have to do a one, let's say you convince him, he now gets a de facto no trade clause.
That's true. Yeah, because he'd have his bird rights, and you get your veto.
And again, who's going to shoot, Zach?
I'll tell you what trade works. Whether base year compensation is implicated or not. Is Julius Randle, Lonzo Ball, and Josh Hart plus a pick, at least a pick, to the Spurs for Kawhi Leonard. That's the trade that I would be trying to make if I were the Lakers. I don't know if the Spurs will do that. I don't know if they want to touch Lonzo Ball and LeVar Ball and Jello and Melo and Bedello or whatever the hell else there are for with the 10-foot pole. If I'm the Lakers, I'm holding on to Ingram for dear life. The Spurs have lost leverage by virtue of this signing.
Yeah.
They have lost a huge amount of leverage. And like I said before, they were very smart about using that opt-in to try and gain it and got some way down the road of actually doing it. I'm trying to get them Randle, Ball, and Hart, or just Ball and Hart. We renounce Randle. We'll give you two or three picks or something. I'm hanging on to Ingram for dear life. I just don't know if there's a deal there for the Spurs. I think the Spurs want Ingram or bust.
Yeah, I think that's true. And because remember that, so here's the thing about the Spurs and Kawhi. They haven't decided that they want to trade him. I mean, they haven't decided that they have to trade him, at least as far as I know. They still haven't completely ruled out, we still have a year left with this guy, and then we still have potential to give him the Supermax.
Yeah,
they're not in the mode where, like, we have to go with this guy. Now, Kawhi could force that. And I always say, it's happened many times in NBA history. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, for example, basically saying, you're trading me to the Lakers. Carmelo Anthony is the most recent example where Carmelo was bound and determined to get himself to the New York Knicks by the trade deadline of that year, come hell or high water. And he took, it was a damaging move to his ego or to his reputation. It was a damaging move to the Knicks in doing it that way. But he was at a player in his prime and he was able to force it. And so if Kawhi Leonard is willing to get his hands dirty, he can make it happen. He can take measures. He can refuse to play. He can come out if they hear that there's word that there's a close deal with the the 76ers, he could come out and say the 76ers are wasting their time and assets by trading for me because there is no way I will ever stay, I will ever play there. And that's kind of what happened, right? Like Carmelo was headed to the Nets, right? And then, you know, there was going to be that meeting. And then Prokhorov just was like, the meeting with Carmelo is hereby canceled. You remember?
Wow.
One of my favorite Prokhorov moments. Like, the question is he willing to get his hands dirty like that? Because he can make it happen, but it's going to get ugly.
I think the hands are already a little bit dirty. Philly looms as a Kawhi team for, they would need some reassurance.
It would be a great trade for Philly.
Well, look, I mean, everyone wants to compare all these situations, right? On the one hand, you have Paul George, who the Lakers assumed they would get and made jokes about it on national TV and now did not get. And so everyone said, well, that's why you have to get Kawhi right now. And on the other hand, you have Carmelo Anthony, who the Knicks could have probably waited and gotten in free agency, although the cap situation and there was a lockout and there was a lot of complexities about how much room they would have to open up and blah, blah. And then they traded some, you know, interesting to important stuff for him and got pilloried for that. This is a situation that I would imagine the teams involved are doing their best to get as good of a read on as possible. And I generally subscribe to the theory that, like, you can't assume anything that's, like, more than 6 months away.
I agree.
In the NBA, there's too much uncertainty. So I would lean toward, if you can get him in the door for a price that is fair, you do it. And probably at the end of the day, I could be convinced to part with Brandon Ingram, although it would really, really hurt me to do it. I would lean to you just assume nothing. On the other hand, you know, the longer this goes, the more you can assume. The longer he's not on a team, the longer he's a Spur, the more every single day that he's a Spur, the more confident the Lakers can get that they have the situation under control. Every single day. You know, if you get to January and he's a Spur, like, you just, Team X that wants to trade for him just runs out of time. That's what the Thunder had a full season with Paul George, like, and they started right away with, hey, everyone show up at the airport and welcome this dude to town. Like, you can't, if you're the Sixers or the Celtics or Mystery Team X, and I don't even know if there is a Mystery Team X, you can't bank on, oh, we can get him in, like, November, December, whatever. Like, you got to get him now, or else every single day the Lakers can and should feel more confident that they can just sit tight and wait. Particularly if Bron is like, hey, sit tight and wait. I like some of these young guys. I want to see what they can do.
I'm signing for 3 years. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I signed for 3 years. How do you like that, Dan Gilbert?
I mean, so the Sixers, it's interesting. What if I told you, so there's a price to everything, right?
Like, what if I told you I could get you a three-story condo on the water?
By the way, I visited your home last week.
You did.
You have a wonderful, wonderful view.
Thank you.
You have a million-dollar view.
Like I did anything. Like I achieved it. Thank you.
Yes. You. Congratulations on constructing that building.
Yeah.
There's a price for everything.
Well, I'm very close to going on a rant about my landlord. I really should dial it back. Please, before I go, please go. I'm really
okay.
Close.
Okay. I don't know anything about your landlord, but it's a beautiful home. The real quick, I don't want to get too deep into the Paul George contract. My read on that, by the way, is that that's an elaborate hedge to Paul's future, and it makes me wonder how serious this knee injury that he had to have surgery on at the end of the season is. But Paul George, based on my read of this, and I've listened to the propaganda on why he signed this contract, is that he's willing to pay $10 million in the third year of the contract. Because that's what it's going to cost him to lock into the third year now instead of becoming a free agent again after 2 years. Maybe $9 million, we're guessing on the thing. He's paying that money basically to hedge that maybe he's still a max player in 2 years and can extend, or maybe he's not a max player in 2 years and he's still locked into a beautiful contract for four. That's my read of the situation. And he basically paid $9 million to buy that hedge, in my opinion. So knowing that, as an example of how you sometimes pay for things in the NBA, would it be worth the 76ers to cost them Markelle Fultz for the right to try to keep, to have a year of Kawhi Leonard and try to keep him. Is the price of Markelle Fultz worth buying a Kawhi Leonard lottery ticket, as the price of Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis was the price of buying a Paul George lottery ticket for the Thunder?
I mean, that question is so fraught with uncertainty, I don't even know what to do with it. I would say ask Drew Hanlon, who's working on his shot, but Drew Hanlon will tell you everything's going to be great. He's going to be amazing. He's going to be Kyle Korver next year. I don't think that anyone can pretend that they know what is going to happen with Markelle Fultz. That's how crazy his one calendar year in the NBA has been. I will tell you this. Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and the Heat first-round pick, as nice as that first-round pick is not going to do it. Dario Saric is a very good player. He's a legit NBA starter, a fourth or fifth starter on a good team. I believe he is 3 years younger than Kawhi Leonard. It's not as if he's a baby. I'm going to look up his age right now because I did this all this morning. Robert Covington is a very good player. He's a fifth starter on a good NBA team, and I mean that as a compliment.
I agree.
He is older than Kawhi Leonard by something like 200 days. And the Heat pick could be good. It could be bad. It could be whatever. Nobody knows. That's not getting it done.
The deal is not getting done
unless Fultz is in the deal. And maybe not even then. But if you want to get serious, that's the deal.
I agree. In all honesty, because Kawhi is not committing, you can't talk about anything higher than Fultz. You're not going...
This idea that they're trading Ben Simmons, I've seen this pop up on the internet. No. Ben Simmons was an all-NBA caliber player this year. He's 20 or whatever he is. On a cost-controlled rookie contract for 2 more years, and then you control his rights for X amount of years after that. There is just no universe in which you trade that person for Kawhi Leonard unless you are 100% sure Kawhi Leonard is healthy and 98% sure he's staying, and it is not possible to reach those percentages.
Well, I said something yesterday on the Jump show that angered some Sixer fans. I don't think Embiid and LeBron are a fit together. I don't think that they would be able to play together. I've been wrong before.
How dare you have an opinion that is contrary to a Sixers diehard fan? How dare you?
Right.
Apologize to the city of Philadelphia, which is a great city. I love Philadelphia.
I'm not going to apologize.
I was sort of hoping he would sign there because I kind of want to move there, and that would have given me a little push factor.
Well, from a basketball perspective, going to Philadelphia makes way more sense than going to L.A. Let's just be clear. I mean, again, the Nuggets were banging on the door saying, "We'll do a sign and trade." From a basketball perspective, it makes way more sense. But this is not a basketball decision fully. In my mind, if the Sixers really wanted to go crazy and go all in and get LeBron seriously interested, I was arguing to offer Embiid for Kawhi, with the caveat that you knew you were getting LeBron. And I was saying, switcherific. Put a team out there of Ben Simmons, Robert Covington, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and the best shooter you can get. Switch the ever-living hell out of everything and play 2018-19 NBA basketball.
Now, people are going to dismiss that as you being crazy because of all the variables I just mentioned about Kawhi. Okay, I get it. I wouldn't do it.
But you'd have to have LeBron in the fold to do it.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not in a vacuum.
So people are still going to dismiss it because Joel Embiid is 22 or whatever he is, 23, and is so it just made all NBA, and Kawhi has all of this uncertainty surrounding him. I wouldn't do it because that's how high I am on Joel Embiid. However, I don't think it's that insane, and anyone who just is going to brand you as insane for saying it needs to go talk to all the Sixers doctors and go through all the Sixers medical reports, which obviously I have not done because that would be a HIPAA violation for me to have seen any of those things. Before you even pretend to have any idea what is going to happen to Joel Embiid in 2 or 3 years. That's just reality. I'm sorry if that's unpleasant. It's just reality. I'm super excited that he had an amazing year and he was healthy the whole year and he proved in the playoffs he could play a very heavy minutes load. It's just reality. No one knows what's going to happen to his lower extremities. We have reason to be confident after last year, but confidence is not certainty. The other thing is...
Can I just say real quick, In 2018-19, could Ben Simmons not be a defensive center?
I think you'd have to force teams out of playing bigger guys, but yeah, someone would have to be on
that
team.
I'm not saying for 38 minutes a game.
No, for bits and pieces, absolutely.
Couldn't Ben Simmons and Robert Covington be the defensive bigs on a team?
I also think that's a little, you're getting a little small, but maybe.
Switch. We're switching, right?
Yeah, no, I think it could absolutely work. I do think that this has been an underplayed storyline to the degree that I actually might write about it when we get some time to breathe. I don't think it got enough attention that Joel Embiid had so many problems defending Al Horford in the pick and pop that they had to hide him on Marcus Morris. They had to hide the number two finisher for Defensive Player of the Year. I didn't see the voting. Did he finish second?
They lost the game because they isolated Embiid with Horford. They ran an isolation play.
This is not a knock on Joel Embiid. I just think it's a super interesting NBA question. If you have a Rudy Gobert or you have a Joel Embiid who are like as good as it can possibly get at being interior defenders and even, you know, better than they're given credit for it coming out to 18, 19 feet, 20 feet when they have to. But you put them through the ringer like that. I'll tell you this. When the Celtics play the Jazz, they are not scared that Rudy Gobert is on the floor. They're happy because they're going to do the same thing to him. I just think it was in this sort of haze of the playoffs where so much stuff is happening. There's so much drama. Is LeBron going to leave if they lose? Blah, blah, blah. You're thinking of all these things. Like, it just, people didn't take the time to freeze. They're hiding Joel Embiid. They're hiding him because he can't guard Al Horford. And by the way, in the playoffs, the later you get, the more Al Horford you're going to see playing center. That's how the game is going to go.
Ben Simmons has handled Al Horford in that spot.
Yeah, sure. Joel Embiid can guard Marcus Morris. That's fine. That's like a very non-threatening place to put him. Marcus Morris isn't a playmaker like Andre Iguodala. He's a guy that there are a lot of matchups where you can do that and it's fine. He just loses a lot of his defensive value, but it's not like you're hiding him on Klay Thompson. It's not an impossible assignment. He can stay on the court and have an impact. I just thought it was interesting. That's all. We're getting off track. I just thought it was interesting.
Sorry. Clearly they didn't really seriously ever consider doing that, but also they never were seriously going to be able to get LeBron. So that's all I'm saying.
Right. So Kawhi, let's spend like 3 minutes on Kawhi and then we can wrap. The Celtics are not offering Kyrie Irving. That's been in the ether. That has not happened. I don't think that is ever going to happen. The Celtics are not offering any of their good stuff right now, nor should they, as far as I know. And then you have the Sixers, and then I just don't know who else. The Spurs need to find somebody else. Maybe they have somebody else, and we just don't know. Maybe they don't, and any rumors to the contrary are all a bluff. They just need to find somebody else. Here are some of the somebody else's I thought of. Andrew Wiggins. But Minnesota would need to add more stuff, and then you take on the enormous risk of having both Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard as free agents. That seems too much. Bradley Beal. Boy, I would think about it if I were the Wizards. A lot of risk, though. A lot of risk.
I think Bradley Beal might be available for the right deal.
I don't disagree. That's why I brought his name up.
I think Otto Porter is more available, but
not getting it done.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think he's that. I want to be clear. I don't think Bradley. I think the right deal is like there might be two such deals in the entire NBA. He's available to the degree that everybody but like two guys in the whole league is available.
Right, that's true.
The other one I thought of, and this gets back to the thrilling subject matter of base year compensation. I wonder if the Rockets could swing some absolutely bonkers where they sign and trade Clint Capella and do 14 different other things and get Kawhi. I don't know how they would do it, but the Spurs need to find another blue chip player to gain any leverage back in this situation, and Capella might qualify. And you know, if there's a roadmap to it, even if it involves four different teams and seven different transactions, it's on a whiteboard. Or one of those crystal clear boards that the really smart people have in the movies, it's on that in Daryl Morey's office. I just couldn't think of anyone else. Like I tried. I just don't. Unless the other wild card is unless the Kings are really that crazy. I also thought sign and trade with Jabari, but that gets you into the same base year compensations.
I don't think Jabari is enough.
They're just not that many guys. So I'm interested to see if and when
what
we
about,
hear tell of such a thing.
I know that it's maybe not directly exciting for the Spurs, but it may elicit some chance for Kawhi to stay. What about Miami?
I thought about Miami because they've got stuff, but what do they got? Like what Miami's going to trade? Wait, Miami's going to trade for Kawhi?
I'm just saying, like,
no. That just to be clear, I want to make sure we're on the same page because I looked at this too. But you're saying as a trade destination for Kawhi?
Well, that's a place where Kawhi may be willing to want to stay.
Right.
Well, so
until Miami's underwater, it's a hell of a nice place.
So tell me, you know, I mean. Is there a package there?
They just got nothing, man. They got nothing. I'm sorry.
I know they've got a lot of just mid level players signed a high level deal.
Unless you are absolutely over the moon about Justice Winslow.
And what about Bam Adebayo?
I just don't see it.
Yeah,
I just don't see it. Their salaries are also so long; they just go on like their contracts are so long.
That's what I didn't understand about the Heat. You know, I understand what they spent space, but I didn't understand why it's so many years.
I thought about them this morning. They were on my list of like potential, you know, random Kawhi teams, and I tried and tried.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just brought them up to.
If Whiteside just hadn't completely collapsed at the end of last season, like he now has negative value. Like Well, yeah, I'm just thinking in general. Like, I'm kicking around DeMarcus Cousins signing trades and things like that in my spare time, and you know, if Whiteside just had an okay season where you could look at it and convince yourself, yeah, in our situation, surrounded by this, that, and the other thing, he'd be great and blah blah blah. And instead, it was like a complete disaster where he's sniping after every game and not playing in crunch time.
If you were ranking their assets, Miami's assets, you would have Richardson and Adebayo at the top. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, and a lot of people called them about Richardson around the draft and were shot down.
And then
Richardson's
Dragic?
A good name. I didn't think hard enough about Richardson. I don't think he's quite a good enough name to really swing this discussion.
So like Richardson, Adebayo, and Dragic wouldn't do it for you. I'm just asking. I'm not arguing for it. I'm just asking.
Well, they're also encumbered in terms of trading picks because of the pick.
I know. Yeah, the pick situation is not good. I know.
And that's a problem. It's definitely worth thinking about. You've got to go. Just give me, you know, as someone who's followed LeBron since high school, we're on the inside of this decision as much as any of us were. What does this mean to you? Like, what did you, when you think of, this is the Los Angeles Lakers. This isn't like, with apologies to the Miami Heat, who are a great organization and have won, what, three championships and all this. Like, this is the Lakers. This is the brand. This is the team. He's going there. This is Kobe and Magic and Wilt, yeah, and Kareem and Jerry West and on and on and on. Like, he's never going to be the most famous or most accomplished Laker. It's just a fascinating thing. Like, what did you think about when you heard it? What struck you? Give me the emotional response.
Well, the difficult thing is I knew for a while he was going to, for days, I had it already sort of, you know, when it happened, I already knew it was going to happen. So I didn't have a visceral response. I just remember, you know, when I first started covering the NBA, I came out here to L.A., and I remember covering these games where it was the Shaq, Kobe Lakers, and the feeling of being at a Laker game was so amazing. The Staples, I mean, I would have loved to watch them in the Forum, but the Staples Center, they turn off all the lights, and they have like the theater lighting. I mean, now other teams do that, but back then nobody did it.
Lawrence,
you know,
Lawrence Cantor is absolutely the best. It's not even close.
Kobe Bryant, you know, and the Laker girls, the Laker girls dance, and then when the performance is over, all Lawrence Cantor does is say, "Laker girls." That's all he says. You know, the Who playing before the game. They play I Love L.A. right before tip-off.
Love it. I love that you mentioned I Love L.A. Every time I go to a Lakers game, it just makes me so happy to hear it. It's so perfect.
The organ during the game, you know, they play like that little drum and cymbal thing when they're on defense. It's just such a feel at a Laker game. I mean, I was blown away by the feel of being at a Laker game when I first came into the, you know, started covering the league 15 years ago. And even, you know, even when Shaq moved on and then they were great with when Gasol came, there was just that feel. I mean, just everything feels different out here. I love the Garden too, but it's just different. There's just a, something about it. And so I get the allure. And, you know, I have to admit, even though I knew LeBron was going to be a Laker for a few days for sure, when it happened and, like, I'm on the SVP show and they've got LeBron on that giant screen in the jersey, I mean, it's a striking, striking pose. And, you know, being there and seeing all these stars there, there's just this buzz and there's a feel. It's going to be an amazing return. The NBA is at its best when the Lakers are good. They have a massive fan base. They have an incredibly devoted fan base. When the Lakers are good, the NBA is a better place. I say that as somebody who's from Cleveland, who knows how much those folks are hurting. I totally feel it. But this is good for the NBA. I don't know if they're going to be a championship team. I kind of think this is LeBron waving the white flag against the Warriors. The Warriors have gotten him. I wrote this during the finals, and I still believe it. Durant has outmaneuvered him.
Well, get ready for the biggest storyline of the coming calendar year.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, like, LeBron does not get outmaneuvered very often. I mean, maybe in small little doses, okay, this guy got him or whatever, he has a moment. But for the last 10 years, LeBron has been the king of outmaneuvering others. He got outmaneuvered by Durant and the Warriors. And this is Kim kind of waving the white flag and saying, all right, I can't beat you. I'm just going to put myself in a situation where I'm maximizing everything for myself, even though I may not be on the best team. And I just think that buzz and that feel will return to Staples. And my feel is that other players are going to come in and they're going to feel it, and they're going to be like, I want to be a part of this, just like people for years were. And the Lakers had died off in that regard. Going to Laker games the last few years did not feel the same. And they had lost that edge. And frankly, they, as an organization, had gotten behind. And they got too old. And I don't mean old in the actual age, just old in the way of thinking. And they had to retrofit. And so it's a great moment for the NBA if the Lakers returning to prominence, and the Celtics are prominent. And I mean, it's going to be wonderful in that regard. But LeBron may well have played in his last finals. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, he's good enough and they'll get somebody. Maybe they'll have Kawhi in 5 days and they'll be right back there. But, you know, Kyrie said, I don't want to play with you. Paul George effectively said, I don't want to play with you. I'd rather be in Oklahoma City. I'd rather be with Russell Westbrook. The fact that Paul George didn't want to be a part of this, he knew what it was going to be. He went to those Shaq Kobe games. You know, it may be returning into a phase of LeBron's career that's post competing for the highest level of things. Maybe it's not, but it's certainly going to be an incredible, tantalizing, to use a Woj term, tantalizing situation, and that may be where he's at in his career. That may be the best he can do.
I'm not willing to wrap. I mean, look, they're not a championship contender right now. They're not even close. I mean, let's be frank. The Warriors are too good. They're not even. I mean, they're not as good as the Rockets. It's not even close. Kevin Durant is going to be the single biggest story in the NBA for the next year now that this is over. And if you don't think that all of these teams, like if you think the Knicks noise is bogus, it's not. Like, I'm not saying
Rachel Nichols is all over that.
Well, I'm not saying he's going there. I'm saying they are absolutely planning their offseason around him. Absolutely, 100%. But, you know, you want to beat the Warriors? Take that guy off their team and put him on your team. That's the best way to do it. And that's what the Lakers are going to try and do, 100%.
Can I just tell you, just use a real quick little dream here? Let's say the Celtics are still this. Let's say Kawhi or Kyrie stays. The Celtics are the Celtics, okay? Let's say Durant goes to the Knicks in a year. And the Warriors, let's say they keep Klay, Draymond, and Steph. That's still pretty damn good. And let's say Kawhi ends up with the Lakers in a year, and it's Lakers and LeBron. Can you imagine the Knicks, Celtics, Warriors, and Lakers having between them basically five of the top eight or nine players in the league?
I think you just caused the tremor at NBA headquarters. I think there was.
Do you know how amazing that would be? And I say this as a Midwesterner, who's somebody who still lives in the Midwest. I'm not being a coastal elite when I say that. But let's just be honest about the reality of our country. My God.
Well, at least maybe we can get somebody on the Bulls then. To get off the coast. The Lakers.
Sorry, Markkanen and Zach Levine.
The Lakers games are going to be awesome. The Lakers games have been awesome anyway. Like Jeannie Buss sits in the second row every game, and there was one game where I went and said hello to her, and she said, "Oh, sit down, talk to me." So we were talking, and most of the celebrities walk in. Some of them I know who they are. Some of them I don't know. Like when the Kardashians roll in or whoever they are, I don't know who they are. I'm sitting there talking to Jeannie Buss, and she says hi to someone, and he turns around from the front row. She's sitting in front of her and says, "Hey," and smiles at her. And it's Denzel Washington. And I just about fell off my chair because that is Denzel, man. That dude, Denzel Washington, is smiling and cackling at Jeannie Buss, and you're just sitting there looking at him. And this is a special, this is a different kind of place. Well, that's where LeBron's going to be next year. We will not see him for a while. He's vacationing in some faraway destination, but,
he left the country when the announcement was made. That was part of his plan.
He's gone, and he's gone from Cleveland, and they're screwed for a long time, but he brought them one of the greatest moments in modern American sports history, ending that drought against the 73-win team. So all good. Wendy, you got a million other things to do. Thank you for taking a little bit of an extended time here on the Low Post podcast. This is a mega event. Obviously, even though it feels almost like an anticlimax in some ways, it's still LeBron.
Zach, you'll never see LeBron play live again because these games at 10:30, you're going to go to sleep.
Oh, well, I go. The jump is filmed in L.A., so not only will I see him live, I'll see him from press row. It'll be great.
People are like, just because they like to jab me because it's an American pastime. They're like, "Oh, you're going to move to L.A., blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, dudes, I've been coming to L.A. for 50 or 60 days a year for 3 years.
I was just there last week. People are like, "Why weren't you on the free agency special last night?" I was just there for 4 days. I can't just live there. I have a family I got to see sometimes.
Yeah, I've been coming to L.A. for 2 weeks, for 7 days a month for 3 years now. So it's not going to affect me at all. But certainly people like to make fun of me that way.
Okay, Brian Windhorst, we get to digest the rest of free agency now in a little bit more of a calm pace, which is nice. And thank you for your insight on LeBron and all things
Thanks,
NBA season. I will see you soon.
All right, take care.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.